Anyone who looks at a balance sheet knows that employee turnover is a hidden cost. It doesn't show up on a balance sheet. And I can count on one hand the number of people that have left our organization. And in fact, I don't even need the whole hand. And many people who leave continue to work with us on a contracted basis. So there is very, very little turnover. And even our younger employees expressed interest in retiring from this organization, which is really great.
You're listening to the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve is in conversation with Christy Pretzinger, founder, president, and CEO of Writer Girl. Over the past 20 years, Christy has grown the company from a modest freelance writing business into a healthcare content consultancy. She speaks with Steve about some of the practical tools she has implemented in order to grow the company's culture, the role of leadership in training and retaining emotionally intelligent employees, and how focusing her leadership on the company's cultural balance sheet has had a positive impact on the financial balance sheet.
Christy, very nice to see you. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Well, thank you for having me, Steve. I appreciate it.
So today I wanted to talk specifically about leadership, something that I think is increasingly important in the world in which we live. More and more people, I think, really searching for some kind of, I suppose, pole upon which to hitch their flag, if I could put it that way. And we're seeing a lot with elections coming up all around the world, a lot of political turmoil. I think there's a gap, if you like, that's being created in the market. And so one of the things that has intrigued me for a little while now is the role that the business leader can play in that, in terms of providing stability, in terms of providing guidance. And so I'm really interested in talking to you about those sorts of things and culture as well, because you started your company some years ago now. You were a freelance writer and then moved on from there to become something of an entrepreneur. So why don't you give us a little bit of the backstory so that our listeners could understand a little bit about what it is that I'm gibbering on about here within context?
Well, to kind of put it in context, when I first started building my business, I said to my accountant at the time that if I couldn't build a business based on kindness, then I would go back to being a freelance writer. And that was, I think, about 20 years ago now. And I obviously had that intention, but then, as anyone in your audience knows who's ever built a business, you just kind of get your head down and start doing the work because, you know, you have to do everything and wear all the hats. But what I only realized was when I could look back and say, oh, that intention turned into the culture that is the core of my organization now. And it's really become about creating an environment where people can thrive. That's what my passion is. I'm no longer involved in the day-to-day of the business. I'm still in leadership and I'm still the CEO and the visionary, but I'm no longer involved in the day-to-day. So for me, leadership looks very much like any questions that come to me. One of my main concerns is always, how is that going to affect the culture? Is it going to affect the joy that people feel working in this organization? Is it going to affect, you know, the tasks that they perform may change as we automate and change platforms. And sometimes work is difficult, right? But we always want to make sure that we keep our finger on the pulse of that culture, because it's my experience that by focusing on your culture as primarily, of course, you look at your financial balance sheet, but if you look at a cultural balance sheet, it definitely impacts the financial balance sheet, because all of the hidden costs from a financial balance sheet show up on a cultural balance sheet. So that's been my experience and what I really feel passionate about.
So tell me a little bit more about this cultural balance sheet. I like that term because, you know, as organizations grow, I've seen this myself in the businesses that I've grown and been involved with, you tend to hit a point where there is a shift in the culture, right? You move from that sort of startup early stage where everybody knows everybody else, everybody's involved, to a point where you have to bring in some kind of structure of some shape or form, and things change. Mm-hmm. And some people, you know, they don't, just don't like that, do they? So how did you find that transition? How did you work that one through?
Well, one of the things that I've learned and had to moderate about myself, by the way, as a leader, is to develop patience and to understand that, sort of like remodeling a house, it's going to take twice as long and cost twice as much, that you really, as a leader, have to give the team the space to experience whatever discomfort they are experiencing during that change. Recently, I would say in the past, I guess it's been almost a year and a half now, we did a really big investment in platform and automation within our organization. And it was very uncomfortable, especially for people who had been here a long time. Newer employees, you know, it was a little easier because they weren't right. Legacy in this the old system. So as we did that, first of all, we did it slowly. We had a champion that was there to problem solve, to hear the questions, to kind of feel the things so that people felt like when it was technical, there was someone they could go to and say, this isn't working for me. Either what do I do or does it need to be fixed? And that was helpful. So there was someone fielding those kind of questions. And then when it came to the culture, we actually did a lot of work around that. We're an organization that uses something called the Enneagram. I don't know if your audience or if you are familiar with it. There's a lot of different personality typings. The reason that I chose the Enneagram is because it's more about the motivation of your behavior as opposed to the behavior. Because a lot of us our behavior can look similar, but why we do what we do is vastly different. And it kind of peels back some layers. So we do that in our organization. And it requires some deep work on the self. You know, you have to become self-aware and also develop empathy for those that you work with because you begin to understand why they behave the way they do. So once you develop empathy, it makes it a lot easier to care about that other person as opposed to just blaming them or dismissing them in some way. So back to this change, what we did is we would have a lunch and learn using the Enneagram and talking about change as your Enneagram type and how are you processing this or whatever. And then we did a big full day workshop when we had everyone, we're a virtual company, when we had everyone in one place for a holiday party in 22, we had everybody do a day long workshop. And it was incredibly revealing. It took a lot of time and it was very, I guess the things that I look for when we do these things are what Brené talks about is what every human wants is love and belonging. They want love and belonging and they want to know that they matter. So in this Enneagram workshop, our facilitator really worked it around this platform change, did some work with SMEs to understand the kind of issues people were facing. And so then crafted this full day for that. And it really gave people room to say, you know, this is really hard for me and I don't know if I can do it. And this is why. And someone might say, well, the reason this person said it was hard is because they judged themselves harshly. And so they feel like there's a black and white way of doing things and they're not doing it right. And therefore, they don't know if they can do it. Whereas somebody else says, I don't know if I can do this because it feels constraining to me. And I'm a type that really likes to have no limits put on me. And this feels very limiting. And so it makes me think I can't do it. So then people can understand why we both feel the same way about not being able to do it. Why we feel like we can't do it is completely different. So that was, for me, and in my experience with my organization, that was very important to how we managed a really big, difficult change. And it takes time, and it takes an investment, both financially and a time investment, and an intention that these people matter, and what they're experiencing matters as much, if not more, than what's happening in this actual change. Did that answer your question, Steve?
Yeah, it does. It does. And what I'm hearing you say is that there is a requirement, I suppose, from not just from leadership, but from other people across the business as well, to really understand the role that emotional intelligence plays in all of this and in the way in which we transact business. And I suppose, you know, from a skeptic's standpoint, who, you know, if you're really sort of analyzing the bottom line, the balance sheet, which unfortunately a lot of companies are moving back to doing increasingly, I think. And I say unfortunately, because I do think that means that you lose some of that overall business mix if you just focus on one dimension. It's a very one-dimensional way of running a business, I've always found.
I agree.
But, you know, I think that some people would then say, okay, I get that bit, Christy, but, you know, here I am, times are hard, and that all sounds a bit fluffy to me. So for that sort of skeptic listening in, did you see things like improvement in balance sheet, bottom line improvement, better interaction with the customer base? So what are some of the, you know, the harder metrics that perhaps other people listening to this could relate to better around the impact of what you've just told us was having on your business?
I think what anyone who looks at a balance sheet knows that employee turnover is a hidden cost. It doesn't show up on a balance sheet. And I can count on one hand the number of people that have left our organization. And in fact, I don't even need the whole hand. And many people who leave continue to work with us on a contracted basis. So there is very, very little turnover. And even our younger employees expressed interest in retiring from this organization, which is really great. So while, for example, another thing that we do that directly impacts the bottom line in a negative way is that I closed the company for the last 2 weeks of December. That's a very large six-figure hit to our organization, to our revenue, because we're not working anything through the house. But the appreciation that I get from people, which is fine, it's not about that. But what's more important is the rejuvenation and excitement and enthusiasm and commitment that employees to a person bring to the first of the year after having had that time off to step away, to totally not check email, not work, spend time with your family, enjoy the holidays. And again, it definitely impacts our revenue for the last quarter of the year, but I've seen that it makes a tremendous difference. If I were looking only at the balance sheet, I would never do that. But if I look at the cultural balance sheet, I can see the impact of that.
Right.
March 8th is International Women's Day, and we want to mark the occasion and make sure you haven't missed our many valuable episodes with Steve in conversation with women in leadership. So we've put together a specially curated playlist featuring the best of women in leadership, and we want to give you special access. All we ask in return is this. Just rate and review the ISF podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Send a screenshot of that rating and review to tavia.gilbert@securityforum.org, and I'll send you back special access to the curated playlist. Again, just rate and review the ISF podcast. Send a screenshot of that rating and review to tavia.gilbert@securityforum.org, and I'll send you access to that playlist.
And, you know, a lot of the people who listen to this work in the information security space, and I'm sure some of them are being able to relate to some of the challenges you're talking about. You know, you mentioned retention. Well, retention is hugely important in our space. There just simply aren't enough people to go around, and the cost of attracting new people is huge without the inconvenience of not having somebody being able to do a certain role. So that's a huge tick in the box, I think, for what you're suggesting. But what about the creative element of it? Because, I mean, you're in the business of creating content. And I'm just wondering whether or not you've seen an uptick in the creativity that you've seen across the business as well.
Well, I'll tell you, honestly, we're at a point where we're trying to figure out how to balance that. Because by implementing this very large software transition, we're actually looking at, did we go too far? Did we get a technical solution for an organization that's culture driven? And did we turn some of that creativity into checklists and boxes and things that aren't creative? So we are very attuned to that and to listening to our employees say, I don't even feel like I'm doing my best work anymore because I'm spending so much time checklisting as opposed to building a relationship with my client, because our mission is we build relationships one word at a time. And they feel like I can't even do that because I'm so busy checklisting. So we look at that and say, okay, how can we dial some of that back? Because again, I look at that and say, that's affecting the way people feel about their jobs. They may not want to stay there anymore because they're not doing the job that they were hired to do. And it's not furthering our mission of building relationships one word at a time. So how do we balance that? But I wanted to address something that you said too about retention. And I also think about obviously a hidden cost on the balance sheet. But what I think about too is all of that intellectual property walking out your door. You know, you've got, we have people who have been here. I think my longest employee is 13 years, I think. She started right after she got married. Now she has five kids. So I've literally watched her grow up. If she walked out that door, and we were so much smaller, she literally built the sales department and built the CRM tool and still works very heavily in contributing to that. If she walked out the door, it would be devastating, but yet that's not going to show up on a balance sheet. So in terms of the creativity, to get back to that though, that depends on whether you're on the operations side or on the sales side too, because the sales side feels like now that we have a whole marketing department and all of this creativity coming, there's a lot more creativity happening over on the business development side. Whereas on the operations side, it feels a little more technical. So we have to try and balance that. And we are looking at it. We're in the thick of it. We're not done.
I think that a lot of businesses, certainly that I talk to, that see technology as being the way forward. You know, it's the panacea, isn't it? You know, that's what you need to have.
Yeah.
You know, this bit, that bit, and the other bit. And what I find interesting about what you're saying is that it's about balance. And it's about making sure that the tech is doing what the tech does best and that the people are still allowed to do what they do best. And somehow, from a leadership standpoint, the trick is to try to get that right, you know, trying to get that equilibrium. Is that really what you're saying there?
Yes, I do think so. One of the things that, first of all, I think to kind of address technology, I feel like when ChatGPT came out, because we as humans want simple solutions to complex problems, everybody grabbed onto it and was like, it's writing. AI is writing. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Most of us already were using AI in myriad ways. But one of the things that I find for what we do is because so much of what we do is highly custom, it's interviewing very high-level SMEs, neuroscientists, neurologists, neurosurgeons, and people like that, and then doing the alchemy of turning their knowledge into words on a virtual page that can be understood by anyone from a fifth to an eighth grade reading level. That requires a lot of humanity. You have to be a human to do that at this point. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, we won't get to a place where that's not there, but because of the whole building relationships one word at a time, in my experience so far, I have not seen where technology can allow you to build relationships that are true. And many, many years ago, when this was even before Facebook, when there were still just a lot of chat rooms, I had said to some of my younger colleagues that I thought that the value of, I don't even know if it was called social media at the time, but I felt like the value of that was to get to where you smile and nod with someone, you know, where you actually can see them, because we all know that so much of communication is nonverbal. So how do you really build a true relationship? And oh my gosh, you would have thought that I would have asked somebody for their firstborn, that I was so completely wrong. And I feel like we've seen as time has gone on that actually I was right, because look how cruel and inhuman people are on social media platforms when they're hiding behind something. Most people would never behave that way in person with another human being, but when they hide behind a screen and act like they have a real relationship, but all they're doing is, you know, harassing people, that's not humanity, right? So I still think that there is a tremendous place for, and not only a place, but a need and a yearning for true human connection. And because I own a virtual organization, I know that you can have true human connection virtually, but it does require a camera. And it does require...
Sorry to interrupt you, but I'm really interested in that virtual piece, that sort of connection virtually, because so many people that I talk to today are really struggling with, you know, are we remote? Are we back in the office? Are we hybrid? Are we trying to compel people to do something that all of that kind of thing? And it seems to me that we've completely lost the plot when it comes to that. So tell me more about this virtual and human piece, because I'm really interested in hearing how you've cracked that.
Well, I never wanted an office because then I would have to go there. So that was, that was really the whole impetus for not having an office. And it really didn't have anything to do with anything else, you know. I really enjoyed working very casually. And this was, you know, back in 2004. So that was my original intention. And as we were growing, most of our employees, as we grew, and it was not rocket fast growth, by the way, either. I mean, I didn't know a lot. I mean, a lot of mistakes along the way, but most of the employees were local at first. So we could meet in person and we would do that periodically once a month or so when we had maybe six or seven people. Then as we started hiring people from all over the country, and I'm in the US, so they were all over the country, we started having to be more intentional about using the tools effectively. So we always make sure that we have a team meeting, an all hands meeting once a month. And we also I always say that we engineer the structure to allow for the weaving of the cultural tapestry. So you engineer the hard stuff and then you allow the soft things to happen. So our values are, we are empowered, curious, kind, and fun. And so instead of just having those be something on letterhead somewhere, we actually find ways to keep those top of mind, because we want those to remain constant and we want everyone to make decisions based on that thread that flows through the organization. So one of the ways that we do that is in our team meetings every month. We ask people, we say this month's value is empowered. And we don't say, how have you felt empowered? It's how have you seen someone demonstrate empowerment? And that change in someone's brain elicits a very different response. So we'll ask people to nominate people, and they'll write a little paragraph about, I saw so-and-so do this or whatever. And we talk about it in the team meeting. We make it, it's the end of the meeting. And then our HR person pulls from a hat and pulls the name of the person that wins whatever we give them. And so what happens then is then she reads, like, this person, Heather, was nominated by three different people, and here's what everybody said about Heather, you know, demonstrating empowerment. So everybody hears that and everybody applauds, and it's not about the reward, it's about the recognition. You know, you've probably heard the saying that babies cry for it and grown men die for it. That's what recognition is. People want that more than anything. And so it accomplishes two goals. One, it keeps the values top of mind, which is very important to keeping our culture top of mind and protecting it. And number two, it gives people an opportunity to be kind, which is another one of our values, to another coworker. And it gives that coworker an opportunity to be recognized and know that they matter to this organization. So that's just one small piece that we do. And we really weave it into all aspects of our organization so that a Zoom meeting isn't simply just a bunch of little faces on the screen. It's actually interactive. Sometimes we'll have people do presentations together from different teams so that they are, again, engineer the structure. We make sure that we weave so that people are not siloed on their separate teams. We make sure that there are opportunities woven into their workday to co-work so that they can learn from each other because they're working on disparate teams and maybe have no idea what the other people are doing. So all of that builds the culture. And then the people have their own relationships outside of the company. And some people who are in town together might work out together, or they might go to a show together, you know, and they build friendships as you would in any traditional workplace.
So again, I think what I'm hearing you say is that there's a lot of positive intent in the way that you're structuring the organization. There is a reason that people can relate to, can understand about why they're getting together, or the options that they have, the possibilities that are open to them within that. And probably, I would say, stretching for some people the boundaries of work. So it becomes something that is very much more of a micro society, if you like. And I suspect,
yes,
that that might be one of the reasons why people want to stay working with you for so long, because you've created this virtual habitat, if you like, in which, yes, they can flourish and succeed.
I think I love your word intention, because I sometimes forget about that one. I mean, obviously I had the intention of kindness, but then as it went on, it's like I always say that building an environment where people can thrive as the leader, it takes both intention and attention. And it doesn't happen with, you know, pool tables and, you know, free beer. That's not a culture. It's really building, and I heard one of your other podcast guests speaking about this, about trust. And I always say that trust is a long game. And when I was first building the organization, the first people, you know, they didn't really have reason to believe that I meant what I said and I said what I meant. You know, that when I talk about balance, I say life-work balance, not work-life balance. And mm-hmm. Our whole organization says that it's life-work balance, because we work to live, we don't live to work. And I feel that way personally, and I always wanted to be treated that way when I was an employee, and I never really felt like I was. So I thought, well, I'm gonna build an environment like that. These are grown-up people. They don't need to be micromanaged. They don't need to work 80 hours a week. We can still be very productive and, you know, financially sound without that kind of attitude. So if you have that intention and attention, then what happens, when I first started, they were kind of like, you know, the first few people were like, yeah, right. But then they saw it happening, and then they started bringing their friends, and they're like, no, she really means it. This is like, this is a great place. This really is this way. And then they start bringing their friends. And then other people, I mean, two of my very good friends' daughters work in my organization, which is, you know, that makes me very proud that they want their kids to work here. And they're very happy. So it kind of blooms that way. We end up with getting people who all maybe had worked together at one point in time at another another company. One of them comes and then it's like, oh, you're still looking for another one like me. I know this person and she's over here now. Or, you know what I mean? So they tend to come that way. And then they come and they're like, no, this is true. It really is this way. And then they protect the culture. I create the environment, but all of them protect it. To your point, it's sort of like a virtual society and they protect it because they know that it's rare. You know, it's rare. And they also do say one of my hopes is always that the way these employees are treated will cascade into their families and friends. And many of them have told me that their children have seen how their parents are treated at work. And hopefully what we all hope is that their expectations will be set higher for the workplace, where they can't be, you know, treated just like cogs in the wheel, which I think, to your point, we're seeing a lot of with this leadership that's like, no, they all have to come back into the office because we have real estate debts. It's like, well, that's not really helpful to people who have found that they can be as, if not more productive being virtual. And so, you know, you have to balance that. You really have to balance that. I've seen a lot of that and a lot of complete lack of concern about the workforce. And it's all about, nope. The only way you build relationships is if you're in the office and you have, you know, water cooler conversations. And that, in my experience, simply isn't true.
I would agree. I mean, I think it is. It's very helpful to be able to meet people, but that's not the only way in an office environment if you happen to have one. But actually, we have to, I think so much harder about creating some of the things you've been talking about to give people that experience. Because my own view of the workplace is that we're never going to go back to everybody being in one place. And I like very much what you say about children noticing, because the blurring of the lines between working and being at home, you know, that's here to stay as well. And I think that we need to do, from a leadership standpoint anyway, we need to do a far better job of really showcasing some of the great examples of how to do things differently. And I think that's what you've done in the last, you know, 25 minutes or so, Christy. So thank you very much indeed for sharing, for giving us some different perspective on how your business has been operating. And hopefully as well, I think giving the listeners some food for thought and some things that they might want to go away and try themselves. So it's been great talking to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, I really very much appreciate you having me and giving me the opportunity to share my experience. Thank you, Steve.
Remember, if you want access to the specially curated list of episodes with Steve in conversation with women in leadership, send a screenshot of your rating and review of the podcast to tavia.gilbert@securityforum.org. Get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn at Steve Durbin. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. Don't miss the ISF Analyst Insight podcast, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.